It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your host this morning. And this is one of our favorite shows on Fed Talk. This is the show about retirement benefits and insurance options. Really a lot of very useful, helpful information for federal employees about their future financial security. Today, I'm joined by Joan Melanson of Long-Term Care Partners. Joan, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
And it's great to have you back on Fed Talk. And also, retirement benefits expert James Marshall, who's been on Fed Talk before, has a lot of extremely useful information about the best way to optimize retirement benefits. James, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you very much, Bill. I'm so happy to be here.
And just a reminder to our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And since we have so much information on our show, if you have a question, please feel free to give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333. Or email us. Just feel free to send us an email, and James and Joan will be glad to answer it at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, James, I understand one of the things you do is a lot of these retirement seminars, and you're in classes with federal employees on a regular basis.
That's correct, Bill. I see about, me personally, I'm just one instructor, but I see about 5,000 folks a year. So I'm seeing a lot of people, and we're starting to see more and more classes. There's a lot more demand because of the things that people are hearing about in the news, I guess. People are getting more concerned. Of course, there's also a lot of people that are becoming eligible to retire more so than they have in the past. But we're seeing an increase in these retirement courses. A lot of folks are jumping in. There's people at some agencies that are waiting in line to get into these classes. They're pretty popular nowadays.
So James, with all the activity on the Hill and the rhetoric, what are you hearing from federal employees? What are they worried about these days?
Well, a lot of folks are concerned, number one, if they lost a bunch of money a few years ago, when a lot of people in America lost some money in their 401ks and their TSP accounts, their savings and stuff, their investments, they're concerned. They're trying to play a little catch up. Some people have already caught up and already ahead of the game again. Some people are still trying to play catch up, but, they wanted to work a little bit longer. And a lot of these folks are eligible to retire. We've got tons of baby boomers that are eligible to retire. They're old enough. They have enough federal service. They can retire any day they want. Nobody can stop them. But they're just not financially ready. They just want to be in a place where they feel comfortable because they have an idea that they might be living a little bit longer, for example, than their parents. And so they want to be able to have enough money to afford to live in that nice retirement. So not everybody retires from the federal government, has a job lined up. Some people really are going to retire, and they don't have any other sources of income to draw from. So their concern now is that, they keep hearing things in the news. They keep hearing things on these various websites, on the Internet, about how Congress might be taking benefits away from them, not only as employees, but possibly even the retirees. And so that's a big concern that I get a lot in class. That's a lot of the questions that I get when I show up to these agencies.
And Joan, tell us a little bit about what Long-Term Care Partners is. What is that exactly?
Yes, Long-Term Care Partners is the administrator of the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. We call it fondly the FELDSIP, and it has oversight by OPM, Office of Personnel Management.
And you work closely with OPM to make sure that program is everything it can be for federal employees?
Absolutely. This program was signed into law in 2000. It was bipartisan, and it was signed by Bill Clinton. And since its launch, we worked very closely. It was put out for bid by OPM, but since its launch in 2002, we've worked very, very closely with OPM to make sure that this federal benefit offers very good long-term care features and benefits for federal employees, and it also has a number of very strong consumer protection features in the program.
And James, back to you with a point you made a few minutes ago about people going to these retirement classes in greater numbers than before. Does this mean, do you think people are retiring in larger numbers than they had in prior years?
I think naturally, because of the aging workforce, yes. More people are going out in droves, and that's showing up at OPM. You know, OPM's obviously filing, more retirement applications than they have maybe in the past. And I think on average, lately it's been about 8,000 to 10,000 employees a month. I mean, can you imagine the workload up there at OPM? There's a reason why they've hired a bunch of new folks and getting them trained up to process those retirements.
That's like 10% of the federal workforce in 1 year.
Yeah.
Excuse me, 5%. It would be 5%.
When I see these people in class, they're telling me that they're doing the job of two or three people. Because they're saying that the people that are leaving, they're not replacing them, and they're having to kind of pick up the work for these people that have been leaving. Now, keep in mind, there's tons of people who are eligible to retire, and they've been telling me for the past 2 years they don't want to retire. Even 5 years ago, for example, agencies were really offering more early retirements and buyouts than they have in the past. And agencies, that's another thing they'll do. They'll hire me on board whenever they need to process a bunch of retirements and buyouts for people, and they don't have enough staffing to handle it. They think they're going to get a certain number of people to go, yet I tell them, I said, I don't think you're going to be lucky to get 25% of these people. When the agency's trying to downsize and they offer these early retirements to folks, I tell the agencies, a lot of these people aren't going to leave, especially if they're only 50 or 51 years old, because all you need is 20 years of service, for example, if the agency offers you an early retirement. If you're 50 years old or older, you can take the early retirement. But if you're only 50 or 51, you're probably not ready to really stop working. And if there's no job opportunities in the area, or you don't plan on moving somewhere else where there's a job opportunity, then the agencies, I don't know why they're so surprised that they don't get the numbers that they're expecting. That's buyout's not necessarily for everybody. It might be good for someone who's ready to go, maybe has a job lined up, but not everybody's jumping on board to these buyouts like the agencies expect.
James, the big panic that I hear from people is the changing the high three calculation to the high five. People, do you hear that in your classes?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the likelihood is that will happen. So far, it's been stopped. But what's the real impact of that? I mean, how much money will it save the government, and how much of a problem will it be for the bottom line for federal employees when they actually do retire?
Well, I ran some numbers, and I'll share those with you. I mean, it depends on whether they're under CSRS or FERS and how long their length of service is and how big their salary is. That all has an impact, of course, if they go to a high five. But keep in mind, and a lot of folks aren't aware of this, but a long time ago, federal employees used to have a high five average salary. If they switched it to a high three, which is obviously more generous. So if you think about it, a high three average salary, which is what most current federal employees have always known for retirement planning, a high three average salary is usually probably an average of what they were making the last 3 years. That's if they steadily increase their pay. So if you think about it, a lot of people, they're expecting their high three average salary to be what it was the year before they retired. So if they're going to retire in 2013, probably what they're making this year is a good guesstimate of what their high three might be. But if they change it to a high five, instead of their current salary being, their high three average salary, it probably would be last year. It would be, like 2011 rate. But also keep in mind,
except that nobody's gotten a pay raise the last couple of years anyway.
Right. So if the president and Congress decides that's one of the proposals that they want to keep, but the same rate of pay for another year or two. Some people want 2 years frozen pay on the Hill. So if that happens, what's the difference between a high three and a high five if you've had the same level of pay for 5 years? But if they ever change the law, it's a proposal, and it might happen one of these days. America is changing, and it could happen. It might go back to a high five average salary. I've done some numbers on this, and it just depends on your salary. The more generous your pension is, obviously the more impact it's going to have on you. But it's one of those things. It's going to cost you about 2 to 2.5% of your monthly take-home pay. So, for example, I just ran some numbers. If your take-home pay was under FERS, if your take-home retirement pay was a couple $1,000 a month pension, it would probably cost you about $50 a month. So you'd probably only get $1,950 a month. If your high three average salary was more like $140,000, and let's say your take-home pay pension was like $3,500 a month, that would probably cost you about $75 a month. So that's what you're giving up if they change the law from a high three to a high five, if you make those kind of salaries. So it's about 2 to 2.5%. If you're CSRS, which is the more generous pension, the way the formula works than FERS, it's a little bit more because the pension is more generous. So if you had a high three average salary under the old retirement system of about $82,000, you could probably be missing out on about $95 a month, somewhere between $95 to $100 a month. If they change the high three to a high five for a high wage worker, someone who's making $140,000, like some of our higher paid federal employees, you're probably going to, you're looking at a pension, and these are averages of like a 30-year career pension, these figures I'm giving out. If your high three average salary was normally 137, chances are your high five average salary would probably be about 134,000. So that's a difference of about $140 a month for most people who are CSRS taking home about a $6,500 a month pension. So, but again, $140 a month to someone who takes home $6,500 is about the same as what $50 a month is to someone who takes home $2,000 a month. So it's about 2 to 2.5% penalty.
So, James, can you talk a little bit about, from the retirement benefits perspective, a little bit about the importance of long-term care in somebody who has retired?
Sure, absolutely. And it's not just for someone who has retired. Very important for someone who's retired from the federal government, but more importantly, for planning for retirement. You really should design that long-term care protection. We'll talk about that for the rest of this radio show. But long-term care protection is so important for not only just feds, but anybody in America, just because it can really derail your retirement income. People are often surprised when they either deal with long-term care with their parents or their in-laws or somebody like an older brother or older sister. They are often surprised to find out how little Medicare covers for long-term care and how little their federal health insurance provides for long-term care. We're not talking about short-term care where you get involved in an auto accident and you're expected to recover a couple of months later. We're talking about long-term assisted living type care that folks are usually paying out of pocket, and they're often surprised to find out how much it really costs to provide for this assisted living care.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm talking with Joan Melanson of Long-Term Care Partners and retirement benefits expert James Marshall. We'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor. Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford, and we're talking with Joan Melanson from Long-Term Care Partners and retirement benefits expert James Marshall. We're talking about your retirement benefits, your future financial security. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call toll-free at 1-877-936-9333 or email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Joan, before the break, James was talking about the importance of long-term care insurance, which is something that you deal with. Tell us a little bit about how your program works.
Sure. Well, first, I would like to say something to what James said. I think it's really important for everybody to talk about the issue and to have a plan, because long-term care insurance may not be the right solution for everybody. So it's very important, and James and I were chatting before the call, that people talk about what's going to happen, because long-term care isn't about the person, him or herself. It's all about the family, the impact of caregiving on the family. So if you have that dialogue sooner than later, you get a sense as to what everybody's expectations are and what their plans are and their wishes. So long-term care insurance is one of the ways to cover the high cost of long-term care. And the way that it works, and James was saying, first of all, that Medicare will pay for about an average of 20, 21 days of care. Then people are paying out of pocket for these costs. The way the long-term care insurance works is that once you are unable to perform what we call activities of daily living, and these are the things that we all take for granted. We get up in the morning and we bathe. We use the bathroom, we dress ourselves, we eat, we do all of those things. Well, once you're unable to or need assistance with two of these activities of daily living, then, and either that or you need what we call assistance verbally, because folks with Alzheimer's or cognitive impairments need assistance, then this insurance will cover the cost of care.
Okay, and so tell me a little bit about how expensive that can be, and what are and the different ways that people can receive assistance in taking care of themselves on a long-term basis.
Well, that's a very good question. The cost of care, and it's I can say it's expensive and only getting more expensive. The cost of a nursing home can be $73,000 and upward. That's an average per year. If you're in a metropolitan area, it's going to be more expensive. The cost of assisted living care facilities is less than that. You're probably talking more about $40,000 on average a year. And the cost of home health care is $20 an hour. And again, you wouldn't need necessarily home health care 24/7. That would be very, very expensive. The way that long-term care insurance works is that once you are unable to or need assistance with two of those activities of daily living, you talk with one of our care coordinators and you develop a plan of care. What is a plan of care? Plan of care is what's the kind of care that you need and where do you need it, taking into account your personal situation, because you may have some family support at home that would enable you to start off a receiving care at home with licensed caregivers coming to assist those who are taking care of you because they're working and they have their own lives. So you develop the plan of care, and that's what's implemented. And typically, the way the scenario goes is that people do start off receiving 4 hours of care 3 days a week at home, and as care becomes more intense, maybe move into assisted living care facility, or the final place is nursing homes. And in fact, about 90% of our care is provided at home or in community-based facilities because that's where people want to be. They want to age in place as long as possible.
So Joan, you talk about these different options based on a person's family support, but you know, you don't necessarily know while you're still working what your situation's going to be maybe 10, 15, 20 years later. So how do you plan for that, and when should you start planning for that?
Well, that's a very, very good question. I wish I had a crystal ball in my own situation, and everybody comes up to me and asks me that question, and I said, if I had one for myself, I'd certainly share it with you, too. What you do then is offer ultimate flexibility to yourself. If you buy a comprehensive plan, which the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program has one, it will cover care wherever you need it. Because you don't know what your situation is going to be, as you point out, in the future. The average age to purchase this product is early 50s, 51, 52.
And that's so, why people are still employed.
Many times, although we do, you can retire, and we have a third of the enrollees are annuitants, or they've retired from the military, and their average age is early 60s. So you don't know what your situation is going to be. I mean, people go on claim in their 70s and 80s. So you're trying to look into the future and say, what will I need? And so your support system today may be very different than what's in the future. If you have a comprehensive plan, then you have ultimate flexibility to consider your situation at the time if and when you need care.
So Joan, if somebody signs up for long-term care earlier in their life, how do the premiums work? Is it cheaper when you're younger, or what? How does that go?
It's one of those nice things about being young. You know, the premiums are cheaper, and the older you get, the more you have to pay. It doesn't seem like there are many advantages to getting old these days, are there? But you're absolutely right. At each age, you look at the age and you look at the benefits that you select, and that's the premium that you will pay. Going forward, premiums are designed that way. However, they can't be guaranteed that the premium will never change. But that's the way they're designed. Unless if you build in your automatic compound inflation, your daily benefit and your pool of money will inflate by either 4% compounded or 5%. If, however, you choose what we call the future purchase option, every 2 years you can elect to choose more daily benefit, and that would raise your premium. So in that case, your premium would go up.
So James, Joan was talking about having a plan which increases based on inflation. The pensions also increase based on inflation to some extent. How would a federal employee try to figure out based on their retirement benefits, what their long-term care needs are?
Well, they want to look at affordability, of course. If they don't have enough income, including their pension and possibly a Social Security benefit, because there are some folks under CSRS, for example, the old retirement system, they don't even have any money from Social Security, or what they have in their TSP account or any other savings. They obviously want to be able to afford the premium, because the last thing you want to do is pay the premium for 10 or 15 years, and all of a sudden you can't afford it because of the rising cost of goods and services and who knows what else. But, if your COLAs, your cost of living adjustments, aren't increasing your pension enough to keep up with the rising cost of long-term care and your premiums, every once in a while you never know. I mean, they may redesign the programs, and they may renegotiate contracts, and the premiums might go up and your benefits might come down, depending upon what kind of choices you have in the future. But I always tell people that, you don't necessarily need to purchase a policy. If you decide insurance is the route you want to go to protect yourself, because the odds are one out of every two of us who live beyond the age of 65 will probably need long-term care eventually. So if it doesn't happen to me, it might happen to my spouse. So I need to have a strategy. And insurance is a great strategy for people who are like federal employees and federal retirees. But, you don't necessarily need to buy a policy that covers 100% of your long-term care. A lot of these folks who have TSP accounts, pensions, Social Security benefits, they might be able to afford some of their own long-term care. That's if the rainy day ever happens. Because we're talking about long-term care, one out of every two of us, it might not happen. So, we don't want to necessarily throw all our money into an insurance package that we might not ever use. But it's one of those things that you want to definitely protect yourself.
Recommend at least getting partial coverage.
Absolutely. I mean, something that, and then the averages that Joan can address here in a moment is about right for most federal employees. The daily figures that people are actually purchasing nowadays are about right. And the protection options that they're choosing, whether they're young at 50 or whether they're a little bit older in their 60s, because they have different types of protection options between future purchase options and automatic compounding. The elections that people are making as federal employees or federal retirees, they're about right. They're about what, I would recommend. You do want some protection, and insurance is a wonderful strategy. I mean, if you had millions of dollars laying around, you can self-insure. You wouldn't need insurance. But most federal retirees or federal employees will never have millions of dollars laying around.
I want to add to what
James can address
said.
That.
I'd like to add to what James said, because I think it's very important to think about affordability and really what you need. Our mission as part of the program is not to go out and tell everybody, buy the FELTSA, buy federal long-term care insurance. Our mission is to go out and educate people about the cost of long-term care and to have a plan. And to that effect, similar to James, we go out and do a lot of educational meetings every year. We do a lot of webinars. We're on the radio show and conferences because we want people to understand the role of insurance. And I think that the message got through for the second open season that we just had, because people were buying good, affordable, comprehensive insurance, and we saw less of the over-insuring. People understand that, first of all, you need to purchase something that's affordable, because you need to pay every single day, every single year until you use the insurance. And the last thing you want to do is pay for 10 or 15 years and then say, oh, I can't afford it anymore. Then you drop it. You get nothing for all of the premiums that you have paid. So it needs to be affordable for a long period of time. And as I always say, it's either good news or bad news that you never need to use it. And so that's a tough sell for people who are young and they're looking at it. But we did see in this last open season that was very successful, we had 45,000 new enrollees into the program. They bought very affordable protection. They bought on average $150 a day, and many of them bought the 4% compound, so that would go up 4% compounded every year, and three-year duration. And that's what we saw them purchase. They weren't going after the unlimited benefit or even the 5 years as much, because that three-year is really a little deceptive. It's a multiplier, and it gives you a pool of money. And initially, going back to the example I said before, if you're using home health care services maybe 3 days a week, 4 hours at a pop, you're only using maybe $80 a day, three times a week. you can, whatever you don't use remains in that pool of money. So you could stretch that way beyond 3 years.
So it might go a lot longer than 3 years.
Absolutely.
So what you're seeing is people don't buy insurance to cover everything, but they buy insurance to cover enough of it so that the rest of their assets can be preserved.
You know, I believe it's catastrophic. I mean, I'm a big believer in not over-insuring, whether you're talking long-term care insurance or car insurance, or even if you're buying health insurance. Some people choose the high-deductible insurance plans because they want to go that way. And I'm a believer it's more catastrophic because you could become very insurance poor if you decided you wanted to insure every dollar for risks that may or may not happen to you.
And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue talking about long-term care and federal retirement benefits. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and I'm talking to Joan Melanson and James Marshall. We're talking about retirement benefits. We're talking about long-term care as a way of preserving, particularly your retirement income. If you have a question you'd like to talk to us, our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. James, I have a question. As you know, we're talking here about a lot of different considerations. You know, and when we talk about long-term care, we're talking about things that could go wrong in retirement. How do you, somebody who hasn't retired yet, do you have like a checklist of things that they have to go over before they actually determine that they're ready to retire?
Well, you know, I try to catch people earlier in their careers than later because a lot of agencies don't necessarily do a great job of telling their brand-new employees about what their benefits are and what their options are and what will happen if they leave federal service at a certain point. But, you know, when we teach our courses, we do have little checklists that we include. But this checklist, if you never end up being able to catch a course, if your agency doesn't offer retirement courses, you can go on OPM's website. On OPM's website, or if you can just use a web search tool like Google, if you just Google the CSRS or the FERS handbook, it'll take you to a page on OPM's website. And you go to that handbook and you turn over to Chapter 40. Chapter 40 is written specifically for federal employees. And they've got checklists in there, things that people should be thinking about years before they retire, things that people should be doing months before they retire, and things that people should be doing days before they retire, and what to expect after they retire, and who they can contact in different situations about different benefits, whether they're an employee or whether they're a retiree or if they're in between. You know, if they're in transition, like they've left the agency but they're waiting for OPM, they're in that dark void waiting for OPM to finalize their annuity. So that Chapter 40 is a wonderful, you know, chapter. You know, that book hasn't been updated since 1998. And I used to work for the company that basically was hired by OPM to write that handbook, but they haven't updated it. But it's still useful. It's still useful. I mean, there's some little details that really aren't that important that haven't been updated, but it's still a useful checklist that everybody for free can go on OPM's website and find that chapter on the CSRS/FERS handbook.
So, James, somebody retires and they've got this checklist and they think they're ready, but what are some of the things that can go wrong? Some of the things you try to cover in your training class so that people are prepared so that hopefully nothing goes wrong for them?
Well, as long as they've done everything, the checklist is done, and you know, they know they're eligible, they know they're getting credit for all their service properly, and they've done some financial planning, because that's what I'm not. I'm not a financial planner, because even though I'm not a financial planner, I can help people save or net thousands of dollars in retirement income just by understanding what they can and cannot do with their benefits. But, you know, once they figure out and they talk to a financial advisor or they do their own financial planning, they feel like they can afford to retire. Now, my question for them is, what are you going to do after you retire? You know, do you have plans? Are you going to be working? Are you going to start your own company? Are you going to be working on the golf course 24/7? You know, what are your plans? Are you mentally prepared? Or what if you find yourself at home a year later and your spouse is kicking you out of the house because you haven't been around them as much during your marriage? You know, you're driving each other crazy. What are you going to do? I see that people who don't have plans, they don't make it very long. I hear sad stories all the time of people retiring. They don't have any plans. They don't have any goals. And 5 years later, they're passed away. You know, wow. I think that's important, and I try to stress that in our retirement courses. You know, you can do everything you can to be eligible to retire and to make sure you can afford to retire. And maybe you can afford to live 30 years, but if you don't have something planned, something to do after you retire, you know, I think that could really change, you know, that chapter of your life.
Yeah, and that's in the broader sense, the things that can go wrong. But then from a financial point of view, if you get sick and you need this assistance to take care of yourself that Joan's been talking about, I mean, that's something else that can go wrong.
Well, that's part of the retirement planning that we cover every class. I mean, even the years before this last open season, and we probably have been helpful to get those numbers in that open season enrollment, we pushed long-term care. We said, look, you know, you guys need to have a strategy. Here's how much it costs. If you get a long-term care insurance policy, you know, it'll keep you from derailing your retirement income. And over your expectancy, let's say, for example, someone starts a policy when they're 50 years old, and by the time they need it, it might not be until their mid-80s or later. They might have put about $30,000 in premiums in it. You know, $30,000 in today's long-term care cost, that could be 3 or 4 months of long-term care, and your $30,000 is spent. But this policy could pay for your long-term care. It might be a $500,000 policy by the time you need it. You know, $500,000 to cover your assets and everything else to protect you. So we definitely include long-term care planning in every course, and it should be part of everybody's retirement plan. I don't care if it's insurance or if you got some sort of chunk of money laying around that you're going to use or you can save enough. There's wonderful tools on long-term care's website that can help you decide if you can self-insure or whether or not maybe insurance is best for you. And the nice thing about those tools, they're not there to try to scare you into anything that you don't need. They're just honest tools that you can use. And if you feel like you can't afford it, and if you think that rainy day might happen to you or your spouse, if you're married, you might want to consider start getting an insurance policy while it's cheap instead of waiting until later.
And Joan,
it might be more expensive.
Joan, why is the federal long-term care insurance program a good one for federal employees?
Well, that's a good question, because there are private plans out there, and we always do tell people to shop around. We want you to make sure you've made a very informed decision, a well-informed decision, because as I mentioned before, the last thing you want to do is pay in for 5 or 10 years and say, whoops, I made a mistake. So we say to everybody, do your homework first. But this program is comprehensive. It's very flexible. I think that, you know, working with OPM, we've made it very understandable. As James said, there's an online consultant tool that walks people through various long-term care issues. It's on our website. We have all kinds of calculators so that you can personally do the calculation to see what the cost would be and do different what-if scenarios. There's a cost of care calculator. We also do webinars, and you can ask questions during these webinars, and those are archived on our website. So we really try to make it as easy as possible. And if you have any questions, you can call our 800 number.
Tell us that number.
What? 1-800-LTC-FEDS. 1-800-LTC-FEDS. And, in fact, our website is www.ltcfeds.com. We make it very, very easy. We also have a lot of features and options that will meet different budgets, because, as we mentioned before, you don't want to overinsure. You want it to be affordable. And the consumer protection features are really a showcase of what we have. OPM is always looking out for the best needs of their employees and annuitants. We also have a feature that was brand new with this product, and other companies are starting to look at it too. And it's the informal home care provision. Now, most policies out there, in fact, probably all of them, I would say, have the ability to receive care at home. But that means you need to have a licensed caretaker come into your home, which works for many people. But in addition to that, we provide, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program provides the ability for informal caregivers to come in. What does that mean? That means that any family member not living with you at the time, so that would exclude a spouse, but other family members, a sister who lives somewhere, or friends or neighbors, can come in and care for you and get paid whatever the typical market rate would be there. That way, you could have somebody whom you know come in and take care of you, someone who might have done it anyway, but they're now disrupting their schedule to do it. They can get paid, and we provide caregiver training as well. So these are some things that differentiate us from the competition. Again, we always say to people, shop around, be comfortable with the purchase.
And federal employees should understand that the Long-Term Care Partners Program is authorized by statute.
It is.
And administered and overseen by OPM.
Absolutely, and the supervision is very intense. Everything that we write, all the policy design, everything has to be approved by OPM, every word on our website, so that they're very vigilant in terms of ensuring that this benefit, and it's the only long-term care insurance program that is under their jurisdiction, it's a federal benefit, and they want to make sure it's done right.
So, Joan, I'm assuming that most people, most insurance plans, you can't wait until you need it to buy it. You have to get it earlier. What kind of underwriting requirements do you have?
Well, it's similar to other insurance. So you can't have an accident and then call insurance company and say, I'd like car insurance. What kind of underwriting? Yes, it is medically underwritten. We've had two open seasons, the first in 2002 when the program was launched, and we just had one in 2010. And at that time, we have what we call abbreviated underwriting, so that 7 questions for employees and 9 questions for spouses to apply for the program. And those are underwritten, and so it's easier. However, the good news is if you've missed an open season, because we don't have them on a regular basis, it's not like other benefits where you can apply every year. We might not have another one for 5 years. You can apply at any time. There are 40 questions in our questionnaire, and they ask a lot of questions about your health. But if you're healthy, you don't have to worry. It's just going through the drudgery of a questionnaire, and our 800 number people will even work with you or fill it out for you if you need some attention. But certainly there are some situations if you already need the benefits, if you're receiving care already, if you've been diagnosed with MS or Parkinson's, or if you've had some diagnosis that will lead you to receive care, then you would not be accepted into the program. And that's similar to all private plans.
Okay, we're going to take our last break here on Fed Talk, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Joan Melanson about long-term care, and we'll talk with James Marshall about federal retirement benefits. And James, I'm just warning you, I have a question for you about that FERS supplement that seems to be under attack in Congress. We'll be right back. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and I'm talking to Joan Melanson and James Marshall. We're talking about retirement benefits, retirement security, long-term care. James, before we went on the break, I mentioned FERS supplement. It's one of those things that Congress keeps trying to attack. Explain to our listeners what the FERS supplement is.
The FERS supplement is an extra chunk of money that some people, not everybody, but some people under the Federal Employees Retirement System will receive if they retire before the age of 62 with a full pension, That's either at their MRA with 30 or age 60 with 20, or if they get off in early retirement, this supplement is payable. And, of course, law enforcement, firefighters, they're eligible for this supplement as well. It's just intended to bridge the gap between the time that a person retires under FERS and becomes eligible for Social Security, which is at age 62 for everybody in America.
And what does it pay a percentage of what their Social Security benefit will be when they turn 62?
It kind of does, if you want to look at it that way. The supplement is computed the same way Social Security is computed, but you're only going to get, keep in mind, it doesn't come from Social Security. It comes from OPM, let's say people who pay the FERS pensions. It comes out of the same bucket of money that they use to pay pensions and survivor benefits, so it doesn't affect Social Security. But it's computed the way Social Security is computed, but it's only based on your years that you were a FERS employee. So if you think about your Social Security check later on in life, that's going to be a combination of apples and oranges. The apples is the money that you earn by paying your taxes as a private sector employee or in the military, and the oranges is the money that you earn from Social Security by paying your taxes as a FERS employee. It's kind of like getting your oranges early.
So how can somebody find out what their FERS supplement might be if they're eligible for one?
If they want to guesstimate it, I'll give you a quick formula that you can just guesstimate. It puts you in the ballpark of plus or minus $50 a month. You could take your total years of civilian service creditable under FERS. You take your total years of creditable service under FERS and divide it by 40. And that's going to give you a percentage. You take that percentage and you multiply it times the monthly benefit that's waiting for you from Social Security at age 62. Where do I get that figure?
That's the one that comes to you every year in the mail, right?
Yeah, you get that figure. It's a monthly figure. So you take that percentage and multiply that benefit at age 62, and there's a rough guesstimate of what your monthly supplement would be in addition to the pension that you might already know how to compute.
Now, one of the things that when I looked at that FERS supplement, I thought, well, if I were a federal employee and I was thinking about getting that FERS supplement, the thing that's unattractive about it is that if you have another job, you actually lose that FERS supplement over time.
That's true. There is an earnings test. It's the same earnings test that applies to anybody who tries to touch Social Security before they reach their full retirement age for Social Security, which is somewhere in their mid-60s. But they, unlike Social Security, OPM lets you have the supplement for a few months, and then they apply the earnings test the following January after you retire. So your timing exit strategy, what month to retire, could really dictate, especially if you have a job lined up that wants to pay you more than $15,000 a year, because that's about the earnings test level right now. If you got a nice job lined up, your timing, what month to retire, that's one of the areas where I specialize in. I help people net sometimes a few extra $1,000 in their first year of retirement because of that earnings test on a supplement. Now, keep in mind, that supplement is temporary, and then the earnings test could affect it because the supplement stops at 62 whether you're working or not. But, I advise some people they might want to consider if age 62 is not too far away, they might want to consider staying on board as a FERS employee a little bit longer because they get an extra percentage, a little extra percentage in their computation of their pension, which is permanent, and that could net them thousands of dollars of extra retirement income for the rest of their life.
So, John, back to the long-term care. Give me a little bit more of an idea, just what it covers and how it works, and somebody needs to file a claim.
Okay, absolutely. First thing that someone would do is call our 800 number, and they would be assigned a care coordinator. All of our care coordinators are registered nurses, and together they work out a plan of care. Once a person goes through the waiting period, the elimination period, then benefits would be paid. And so, again, it's the advantage to insurance is that you have the option, the claimant has the option of where he or she wants to receive the care. It's not dictated that, you must receive it in an assisted living care facility or where it's received. That you work together with the care coordinator to develop the plan that best meets your medical needs and your personal situation.
And I'm assuming these care coordinators are also aware of how the person's benefit plan works, so they can to try to develop something that's more economical that will last over time.
Absolutely, and that's why you work with them. And the idea is to look at what's the diagnosis and what's the best way to effectively use those dollars. If it looks like you can be effective with care at home for a period of time, that's a good way of saving dollars. The last thing you want to do is go to a place where you're paying for care 24/7 when you only need a few hours worth of care a few days a week. And they're there to help. Look at your situation. If you have Alzheimer's, there may be a different scenario than if you have a different type of diagnosis.
Some of the disabilities or some of the need for long-term care, some illnesses last longer than others.
Absolutely, and nobody has a crystal ball. If someone's diagnosed with Alzheimer's, we can't say how long that person is going to live. A doctor, a nurse, nobody can make that prediction. But you can give someone a little bit of a sense as to what might be happening down the road.
So, and I think I heard you earlier say, Joan, that if you take out the long-term care insurance, you pay the premiums until you file a claim and you stop paying the premiums?
Right, you stop paying the premiums because we're paying you the benefit at that point.
Okay,
but you do have to pay each and every year until you use the benefit.
And how are the premiums paid? Are they withheld from paychecks or from annuities, or do the people have to write checks for them?
Oh, we'll take your money anyway that works for you. You can a majority of people like the payroll deduction because if you don't see it, you don't miss it. When they retire, they switch over to have it deducted from their annuities. It's just a very easy way of paying the premiums.
Okay. And now, James, you mentioned that you do a lot of retirement training. Is there some way people can get a hold of you if they're interested in hearing more about you and having them having you come to their agency to put on some training?
Well, absolutely. I've got a toll-free number. It's 1-800-590-6982. Or they can go to my website, and, of course, all my contact information is there, www.federalretirementinfo, like short for information, INFO, so it's federalretirementinfo.com. And they've got my email address linked there as well, so they can always reach out to me through the website. And there's some useful information on the website. It's growing, but some little few articles, but more to be added soon. But they can always reach me through my website.
And James, a lot of the proposed legislation that I'm seeing in Congress now, it's really focusing on federal employees paying more for their annuities, for the FERS annuity, maybe 5% more ultimately, and the same with CSRS. From your perspective as a retirement benefits expert, what do you think the fallout is going to be if the cost of the annuity is increased that much?
Well, for the folks who are eligible to retire, especially if they keep the pay frozen, I think we're going to see more numbers than what what agencies are expecting. I think they'll finally get the numbers they wanted to a few years ago for their early retirements if they're offering them. But even the ones who are already eligible to retire, a lot of them are telling me in the class that if they have to start paying 5% more, especially if they don't get any type of pay increases over the next few years, they're just going to retire because they just can't afford it. They can afford to live on their retirement income. They've already done their numbers. So a lot of folks are going to retire because we're talking about for a FERS employee who makes about $80,000 a year, or even a CSRS employee makes about $80,000 a year. That's going to cost them extra $340 a month. $340 a month, out of what they aren't even getting any more increases or anything like that. For someone who makes $140,000 a year, they're going to be missing out on about $600 a month. That's $600 a month less than what you're receiving today if they increase your contributions in the FERS or CSRS by 5%. That hurts people now, not just in retirement. if it hurts you now, that means you can't really save as much money in the TSP anymore, and you can't pay off your house. You can't double up your mortgage payments, for example, over the next few years to pay your house off sooner.
And James, the buyouts that some, you know, many agencies are offering now, up to $25,000. Do you recommend that people look for that and snap them up, or do you are a little more cautious about it?
Every class I teach, all the benefits, all the stuff that I talk about, I say what's right for one person is not right for everyone. I say, and I never tell people what they should do. I just tell people, you know what? The reason why a lot of people aren't stamping up this $25,000 because after taxes is about $17,000. And if you're in your younger 50s and you're qualified for an early retirement that your agency's offering you, if there's no job lined up and you're not really done working, you know, are you ready to really, you know, just live off nothing but your pension because you're still too young to have Social Security and maybe you don't want to touch your TSP account at the tender age of 50 or 51? You know, $17,000 isn't going to go very far, especially if you plan on staying here in the D.C. or Maryland area. But, you know, if you're ready to go, you know, by all means, you know, it's just an extra little chunk of money that you can use, you know. But I don't think that everybody should just jump out there and snap it up if it's offered to you, unless you're really ready to retire. That's a big decision to make. Because once you retire, there's no guarantee that you'll ever be able to come back to the federal government if you ever want to later.
Okay, and Joan, we got a couple minutes left. Somebody's in one of James's retirement classes, and he's telling them about long-term care as a way to preserve their assets and preserve their retirement security. What makes the federal long-term care program a good choice for federal employees?
Well, it's a program that OPM carefully researched before they put it out in an RFP to assure that it meets the needs of federal family members. It has it's very flexible. It has the benefits that are very understandable. It's not complicated. There are only three decisions you have to make. How much do you want to get paid on a particular day? What's that daily benefit? For how long? And what's the inflation protection? Everything else is in there. It's not like many private plans where everything is a la carte. The whole meal comes with it, with these three choices. And all of the comprehensive benefits are there. Because we're a self-serve model, we don't work with agents. It has to be something that is easy for consumers to understand and select. And about three-quarters of folks do choose a prepackaged plan. We have four of them where it's just a matter of making those three decisions. OPM is always working with us to do research.
Joan, I'm going to have to wrap it up here.
And sure.
I'd like to thank both Joan Mellinson from Long-Term Care Partners and James Marshall, a retirement benefits expert, for being with us here on Fed Talk. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys at Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Have a great weekend.